This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast with me, Ian Doyle, back on hosting duties, first time in a while. Just to let you know that there's been some changes around this place. Blood Red has been compelled to move into a new direction. Also on top of that, quite a lot of people today have decided to work from home. In other news, it's the Christmas do later tonight.
I think those two things are linked.
I couldn't possibly say that. So as you can probably tell, we are joined by our full-time Liverpool correspondent, both home and away. It's Paul Gorst. Hello.
Hello. It's been a while since I've been introduced as that. It feels a bit of a throwback. But
well, it was the old Jamesy thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I feel as though the people who've been hosting recently haven't really put that across.
Accentuated the full-time Liverpool correspondent, both home and away. I feel like I should put that in my Twitter bio.
Yeah. I'm surprised you haven't, to be honest. Yeah. And also joining us, we've got a special guest direct from the news desk. It's Ryan Patton. Hello.
Hello, Ian.
How are you?
I'm good. Although, you know, I've been drafted in to fill in because it's the Sports Christmas Night Out tonight, but I'm quite offended that I've yet to be invited to the Sports Christmas Night Out.
Oh, I see. So you're offended that you've not been invited to the night, but you've not been offended that we've never invited you onto this before.
Well, it's the first time I've ever
once you've done a pod,
So once this, I'm expecting an email directly from Joe Rimmer or Liverpool FC correspondent on one way, Paul.
Yeah, it's more likely to come from me.
Settle down, kids. So, yes, there's a little bit of excitement because obviously Liverpool won a game, Paul, yesterday, it feels like last night, it was a long time ago, 4-3 against Fulham. I think it's fair to say it was not the game anybody was expecting.
No, it wasn't. As I was walking up through Stanley Park on my way to the ground, I was thinking, got to be a real kind of hardy, diehard, true red to be coming out for this weather. I mean, it was absolutely freezing, and obviously we're there in a professional capacity, but the likes of Ryan were there as a supporter, and it was a bit of a sleepy, subdued sort of Sunday atmosphere. No one really could get up for it, and that sort of translated onto the pitch, didn't it? Liverpool started okay, well enough, but each time when he took the lead in the first half, just let complacency set in, which was a bit unlike Liverpool, really. Certainly this season at Anfield, they've been excellent, haven't they? You know, games against Forest and Aston Villa and even West Ham to an extent. And this was totally different to what we've been able to watch this season. And in the end, it wasn't really a surprise, was it, when Bobby Reid pops up with the header at the back post to make it 3-2, because Liverpool just didn't kill the game off when they had the chances to. And when it went to 3-2, I was thinking to myself, they're going to equalise, because they've still got, you know, 15 minutes. But they'll equalise and it'll get painted as a kind of positive result that they haven't lost. And I remember thinking that I'd be annoyed if that was the case, because these are the games that Liverpool, if they're serious about doing something this season, that they have to be winning. But then once Endo scored, I was actually thinking they're going to win this. And then, you know, I just didn't expect Trent to score about 40 seconds after Endo did, to be honest. I thought it might at least have come in stoppage time. But it's just, you know, Liverpool and losing positions, they seem to have made a bit of a habit of it for too long now, really.
It's 15 points, isn't it, this season that they've got from losing positions where they've managed to take something. There's only since they got beat at City 4-1 last year, I think there's now been 12 games where they've been behind, and the only one that they didn't get anything from was Tottenham, which obviously we know what happened there.
Big asterisk next to that one.
Now, Ryan, I'll start with an easy question for you.
Thank you.
To be fair, have you ever seen a game that's had that many good goals from one team in it?
I have not, no. So it was like, as Paul was saying, it was such a strange game. I sort of feel like as I was going to the ground, I sort of expected a comfortable Liverpool win, and I think the crowd did, and that sort of explains the subdued atmosphere. And then once, you know, Trent hitting that free kick, you're thinking, okay, now Liverpool are going to go on to saunter this, and Liverpool win amazing, like sort of from a team perspective going forward yesterday, but it had outstanding goal after outstanding goal, just four absolute worldies, you know. I think all of them could be, well, I don't know if Trent's, because the first one could be an own goal.
Are you giving it him?
Well, it should be, shouldn't it? I mean, it's a very harsh one, but I think, you know, by technically it probably is bouncing out, isn't it? If it doesn't hit the goalkeeper, but it's one of the harsher ones that I've seen. That's retrospectively given an own goal, because
you can claim it's a goal contribution.
If not else.
Doesn't count as one, though, does it?
No.
Apparently, doesn't even count as an assist, which seems a bit daft when you consider that it's his free kick and he's done all the hard work, and, you know, the goalkeeper while he is a bit unlucky. I mean, goal, he's not going to be going like, oh, please give me that goal, is he? No, he'd be quite happy for Trent to have it. So, but just overall, in the performance, you mentioned that they didn't play great. I mean, I thought in the second half, Liverpool were quite not good at all.
Yeah.
They didn't have that kind of tempo or energy to them, and there was no kind of inspiration. And to be fair to Klopp, he changed things around, I think, two or three times with the formation, and they got there in the end. But you wouldn't have expected it to be, of all the players, Endo.
It was such a Klopp substitution, Jess, that I thought quite odd. Because in terms of, you know, I thought McAllister was probably the standout performer from the midfield three. And he was the one that he was taken off for Gomez to put Arnold into the midfield. That was a surprising one. And I don't think that quite worked in terms of it was Liverpool kept on being quite just disjointed going forward. It wasn't like a clinical attacking performance from a team perspective whatsoever. And then, when he then brings Enzo on in the eight, and when we're chasing the game, I think everyone was thinking, what on earth is this substitution? And then Enzo just comes and pops up with an absolutely brilliant goal. And I think Enzo was just one of those players. Like, when we signed him, I did think he had all the hallmarks of being this cool player who's going to end up having one big moment, which in 10 years' time you'll remember. I think in 10 years' time we'll go, I mean, Enzo just scored that great goal to equalise against Fulham.
What's a great finish? I didn't know. We had that in his locker, to be fair. No, I know he's good in the air in terms of, you know, I think his other goal was a header. But when it got laid off to him by Salah, I just didn't expect it. I was thinking,
he scored a fair few in the Bundesliga, to be fair, from that position.
He scored a goal that just kept them up, didn't he?
Yeah.
Minute goal. I mean...
But the other thing you forget about Endo, he's 30. He's 30 and he's been the captain of Japan for years. And I think they're a top 20, you know, FIFA rated. Well, not that we... no much stock in the FIFA rankings, but that just kind of suggests that Japan aren't awful, which they aren't. We know this. So he's been around the block a few times, so he knows what to do. So it's probably just been a case of him just having to adapt to the Premier League, because he hasn't really played that many minutes in the Premier League compared to, like, I think he started all of the Europa League games, and I think one of the two League Cup games.
Yeah, well, actually, we had a chance to speak to him after Thursday's game, and that was one of the things he said. He said he has been a bit surprised by the kind of speed and power of the Premier League, and it's going to take a bit of adjustments to get up to it. But what I kind of celebrated as much as the goal yesterday in my own mind was when he won the 50-50 at Bologna in like the 88th minute or something. You know, that was a textbook kind of defensive midfield tackle, getting there first, reading it well, being strong in the challenge, and Liverpool come away with it. And yeah, it's just a really decent squad option, isn't he? Particularly when Liverpool don't really have another archetypal number six in the ranks. So big moment for him yesterday. He took it really well.
I mean, I mentioned that tackle, and I checked after the game because I wanted to do something on his stats, because I was writing about him, and it said that he made no tackles in the game. And I was thinking, does that not count as a tackle because the ball was there to be won?
Yeah,
so he's not taking it off somebody. This is why this is
rely on statistics.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Obviously there's a place for it in the analysis of football, but you know, we've seen it as clear as day.
Well, it's like you can tell from when you see he came on, he ran around the lot. He had the shot that was blocked that won them a corner just before he then equalised for the 3-3. And what I hadn't noticed until I actually watched a bit of the highlights before is that when they made it 3-3 and then the ball, you know, kick off, they get the ball back straight away and then going down the wing, it's Endo who gets the ball that Gakpo just takes it off him and says, I'm having this one, and he runs off and he has the shot and they end up scoring from it. But he is kind of, you mentioned he could be a cult tip, he doesn't want to be one, does he?
No.
No, he doesn't. To be honest, that's the last thing you want to be if you're playing for Liverpool, unless you're of a certain standard that you know you shouldn't really be. You know what I mean? You're right. It is damning with faint praise. But he's going to have to start playing more games now, isn't he? Because purely on the weight of the number of games that Liverpool have got coming up, there's a lot of big games as well. And with the FA Cup draw against Arsenal, that's going to be another one. Interesting to see who plays in that one, but that's obviously a bit further down the line. But he's going to get the minutes, because you mentioned McAllister. I mean, I asked Klopp after the game why he should have been substituted. He kind of got a bit angry with me. I said, had he taken a knock or was it tactical? And he thought I was kind of suggesting that he played poorly. But I was in agreement with you. I assumed he must have had a knock or something because I thought he'd been with Trent, the two best players on the pitch. Turns out he was a bit tired. And obviously Klopp's looking up further down the line. He got the game against Sheffield United on Wednesday, so on and so forth. And, you know, in the end, he got the substitutions right. But just going back to Endo, do you think this might be an opportunity or certainly something where he can kickstart his Liverpool career from this?
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Well, definitely, because I think, yeah, like you're saying, when he started, I think it was his first game in Newcastle away.
Yeah.
And he looked really off the pace where he was getting caught on the ball a lot. Where,
I mean, to be fair to him, Liverpool were down to 10 men after half an hour.
Exactly, and that is a difficult game in itself. Yeah. And you know, and he obviously will need to take time to get up to speed with the Premier League. And then he had a bit of a poor performance in the Europa League as well. I can't remember one of the away from home games. And well, I think Thursday was probably his best game so far for Liverpool. It was quite a very competent performance, but then you've got to take into account the standard of the opposition. But I think football is such a momentum game, isn't it? And like, and when you have this moment that can act as a springboard, like you've seen it so many times with players' careers where it can just one thing and then it leads to a great upturn in form. And the games come thick and fast in the festive period, but obviously we can't just rely on. I think McAllister sometimes looks a bit uncomfortable in the number six position anyway. So if Endo can sort of start in the Premier League and put in a similar performance like he did on Thursday in the league game, I think he's got it in him against weaker opposition. I think he'll start on Wednesday against Sheffield United.
Can I just say, you've mentioned thick and fast and festive period there, so you can definitely get a job and working as a sports reporter. You can get all the cliches, yeah, tick them all off.
They're all getting ticked off. I think with Endo, he's been a little bit unfair in the circumstances that he come into the club.
Yeah.
You know, Liverpool trying to get Moise Caicedo for 110 million or whatever it was, fell through, bring this lad in from Stuttgart who, you know, unless you're a Bundesliga aficionado, not too many people have heard of him. Without being disrespectful, I know I was certainly critical of it at the time, you know, just what is going on here. And that was through no fault of his own, really. You know, if Liverpool had signed Endo in June, you would have seen it as a bit, you know, a pretty shrewd kind of squad building method of getting someone in there and then you're going after the rest of your main targets. The fact that they signed him the way that he did after the season started meant that there was a little bit of a different perception over how his signing should be greeted. But you know, a few months into his tenure now, he's starting to show a little bit here and there of what he can do, isn't he? And I still think he will be, you know, mainly a squad option. I don't really see him becoming a first choice where Liverpool are relying on him in major games, you know, if they're going for the Premier League title in, you know, 2, 3, 4 months or whatever. But I think he's starting to show that he can be depended on more than just playing the also-rans in the Europa League.
We'll come up to Trent in a minute. Just dwell a little bit on Dominic Szoboszlai. I mean, I've been not worried, but you know he was always going to have a drop off of form eventually, given how well he'd started his Liverpool career. But do you think the time might have come for maybe just to take him out of the starting lineup? I mean, you look at Harvey Elliott's been doing very well coming on, probably due a start in the Premier League, I'd have thought. And you've also got the option of Curtis Jones as well.
Yeah, 100%. I think Szoboszlai was the weakest of the midfield three yesterday, and I think it's sort of a continuation. He's definitely had a dip in form. Like, he obviously started and just looked an absolute whale beating. You know, like, how was Liverpool the only team sort of we sort of got a signature without any competition? And like, but so it was a drop off was always going to come. He had that like amazing. He scored two goals for Hungary in the international break. But I think even before the international break, he had a little drop off in form as well. And like, yeah, yesterday he struggled to have any influence on the game whatsoever. He was quite anonymous. And when he had like his early performances for Liverpool, when he was just all over the pitch, covering everywhere, he just had this energy that just meant that he's just impossible to not impact the game. Like, that has definitely dipped off. So maybe he does just need to be taken out of the final line, have a little bit of a rest. And like you've just said, you know, I was surprised yesterday that Harvey Elliott or Curtis Jones didn't
very unusual for them not to come on.
Yeah, didn't come on. But the fact, you know, if they're fit and we've seen what Elliott and Jones can do, I would suspect that they may start ahead of Szoboszlai on Wednesday, just because he does seem a little bit tired to me.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think we might even see both Jones and Elliott.
We'll do the team later. We'll do that later. Don't. Yeah. But anyway, about Szoboszlai.
Yeah, he has had a dip, hasn't he? Not noticeable to the point where he's being, you know, you can say he had a really poor game, but he's just not quite hitting heights that he was in August and September. But you know, no real major concerns. He's just doing a little bit of a breather. Not long term, 23 as well. I think that's been overlooked a little bit, as he's only just.
What was it? A big birthday party or something?
Well, no, it's just, you know, that's a young age. Comes to Liverpool at 22, he's expected to be, you know, one of the most expensive players ever. So he started well, but yeah, maybe a couple of games where he's sitting it out and then come back in and refreshed.
Well, let's get on to Trent then, Paul. I know that you've been very much on the bandwagon of do not play him in midfield. Have you kind of revised that opinion in light of recent events?
Yeah, you know, maybe Gareth Southgate had that right all along. I think he's just such a unique player now that I think we maybe have to start looking at him in a little bit of a different light in terms of like tactical frameworks. You know, is he a right back? Is he a central midfielder? I think essentially it's just get him on the pitch and get him into areas where he can affect the game. Whether that's from a little bit of an inside right position where he's picking that final cross, or whether it's as he has done against City and yesterday in and around the penalty area scoring goals. Just a phenomenal footballer. And I was having a look at his stats on FB Ref, which is a scouting tool if you're not aware of it. And all of his kind of like, you know, passing stats and assist stats are like 99 percentile in the top five leagues in Europe over the last 12 months. And you know, considering Liverpool weren't anywhere at the best last season, he's, you know, for those to be as high as they are just shows you how important he is.
So would you play him in midfield?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say there's a conversation to be had, but it's one that we've been having for years, isn't it, really? It has been noticeable that he's gone into that number six position and Gomez has carried on playing the hybrid role. So I think Klopp's starting to see a bit more merit in it at times. It's only been kind of ad hoc cameo stuff, hasn't it? Bournemouth in the League Cup and then obviously yesterday when Liverpool are chasing it. But I don't think it's going to be far off him just being in central midfield from the start in a game and see how he gets on.
It's interesting that he did do this change yesterday, though. Like we've alluded to, like Elliot and Jones were on the bench and they're both players who Klopp trusts, and the fact that he did go for push Trent into midfield while chasing the game, I just thought that was such a, it felt like a shift in how Klopp's play went about it so far as well. And it's just one of the most interesting like conundrums in football, isn't it? Because it's the argument of like, are we getting more space from when he drifts in from right back position to control the game, but then when he's playing further forward, he's in positions then when he's more likely to have a decisive impact in the game. And it's like, would you move the best right back in the world to midfield? But then now the argument is like, well, if Jude Bellingham played right back, would he also be the best right back in the world? Or like Kevin De Bruyne is like, is he just this, that sort of level of generational talent, which obviously we know that he is, where it's like, do you just play him midfield now? It's a difficult one and I don't really know the answer to, because we've now got quite a creative midfield as well. So to then put Arnold centre midfield all the time and then play Gomez as a full time right back, like, is that utilising the squad option to the best? I'm not too sure, but I just think I think that represented yesterday a bit of a shift in Klopp's mentality, and maybe we'll see him depend. I think it'll be dependent on the opposition all the time.
Yeah, I think if Trent's not playing at right back, I don't see the merit in this hybrid thing. I think Joe Gomez is a centre-back playing at right-back and then he's being asked to play centre-mid.
Must be a reason for it.
I think it's just to keep the team used to the shape.
So why would you change it then?
What do you mean?
Why would you change it then? Unless you think that Trent's going to be going into midfield permanently.
I think obviously getting Trent in those central areas with a passing range can obviously help Liverpool, but I don't think Joe Gomez is anywhere near that standard of attack-minded player. So it just doesn't make sense to me when Trent's not playing for Joe Gomez to be doing it, other than the fact that it gets the rest of the players used to the system and the rest of the midfield is used to this defender popping up in these areas. But I think maybe there's a decision to be made soon with Klopp. Is it time to, you know, one or do that? Move Trent into midfield and then get a right-back, or keep him at right back and look to carry on? Because while you can see what it does from an attacking point of view, you know, Fulham targeted that area yesterday, and all the goals came from that area, didn't they? So, well, I suppose one was a corner, but certainly the first and the third were from that right back area and crosses coming in.
No, the first one was really because Gravenberch gave the ball away
and then he broke. But then Matip has to come out to fill the gap that Trent vacated, and that's not...
He wasn't on by that point, was he? Had he already gone off? I can't remember.
No, for the first
one. No, he wasn't. He was the third one. Was he still on? I think he was still on. No, he was Canati, wasn't it? Yeah. Canati.
But, I was watching the replay back of the first goal for Fulham and I'm looking, where's Trent? And he ends up in the centre-back position because Matip had to go over and, you know, okay, I get that not every system and formation is perfect, but it just feels like Liverpool are open to being caught in those areas. But we have to carry on doing what they're doing.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
So we spoke about Gomez just then. I mean, how do you think, we were talking about it before actually in the office, just how do you think he's done this season? Because as far as I'm concerned, he's come on. Did he come on against Newcastle, wasn't it? When Van Dijk got sent off? Yeah, because Quarter came on at the end, that's right.
Yeah.
Then he played a couple of games at centre-back. Then he ended up playing he's been playing the cup games at right-back. He played a left-back against Luton. He came on at right-back on yesterday. It was interesting because
started right back against Wolves when Kwanzaa started with Konate,
and he's been playing that as the inverted right back role. It was interesting, Klopp said after the game, he made a point just unprompted, just saying, you know, Gomez, he put in some good balls, you know, perhaps, and he didn't say this, but we've at the time we were saying somebody should have been on, there was certainly one where someone should have been on the end of it. Yeah, I think it was right near towards the end, but you know, he's not really been renowned for that, but that's kind of been added to his game.
Yeah, his delivery is not that bad. It's like it's obviously not. It's not ten times than Arnold, but when he finds himself in those positions, sometimes his crossing's quite good. But
he got an assist, didn't he, on Thursday for Diaz?
Yeah. I was worried about Gomez, particularly last season, because he thought the injuries had just got on top of him too much. He'd had too many little stints out of the team, and whether he would rediscover that form, that was because he was a vital part in the title winning side. Wasn't he? But I had written him off, to be honest, because he was so poor last season. There was loads of casual errors where it would be like he would just that goal against where Leeds scored against us in that field, where he just played Rodrigo in or something, I think. And but this season he's been brilliant, and like it's good. I really like him as a player. I think he's got a lot of ability, and like there's a lot to like about how he approaches the game. So it's like I want him to do well. So the fact that that whenever he's been called on this season, he's just been really good, and it's been the same with Matip as well. Matip was another one I'd sort of written him off, thinking he's just at the tail end, and I think Matip, and always be, it seems, have got a really really bad injury now. But this season, both of them, whenever they've been called upon, they've not let us down at all.
Yeah, I think Gomez is having a really good season. I'd agree with everything you said there, Ryan, in terms of him last season. It looked like he was really struggling. Yeah. But I think because he's been at Liverpool for such a while, and he kind of preceded the Klopp era, that you forget that he's only 26, isn't he?
Yes. He's longest-serving player, isn't he?
Yeah. Signed a new contract last summer, was it?
Yeah.
So, you know, if he just keeps on doing this, you know, little bit of a utility man, isn't he? I don't mean that to sound like Endo, we're damning him with faint praise, but he's having a really good season coming in when he needs to, and I'm sure he'd like to be playing centre-back every week, but at the moment he's got a good, solid little niche in the squad, and just need to keep her up.
Now, another player who's been at Liverpool, probably, actually I think it's about as long as Gomez, is who was in goal yesterday, which is Kevin Kelleher. Now, obviously he's not played anywhere near as many games, Paul, and the fact that was only sixth Premier League start in that entire time. Admittedly, it's been 4 years since he made his debut, so how did you think it went?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be worried if Alisson's injury is worse than we first feared. Klopp was kind of saying that he expects maybe he'll be back for Palace. But he didn't have a great game yesterday, did he? I thought he could have done better with Tete's goal. Possibly could have done better with the first one, if that's not being too harsh. But yeah, I mean, he's a really good backup for Europa League games and cup games and whatever else. But I just hope Alisson's back.
Do you think he just needs a run of games though?
But I
think the problem they've got is that obviously Liverpool are set up to play with Alisson as the goalkeeper, because they know quite well he's good at one-on-ones and he can, you know, come out and sweep up. Now, Keller's actually quite good with the ball at his feet, although there were one or two moments yesterday where things got a bit nervy, but then we've seen Alisson do that in the game at Man City, for example. Mm. So, you know, that can happen to anybody, but he doesn't seem as good on the one-on-ones, but then that's something that you can only learn over time from constant exposure to those kind of situations. You could do it a million times in training, but you know, it's nowhere near.
Yeah, I mean, he could benefit from a run the side, couldn't he? But ultimately, if Alisson's fit, Alisson's playing, because I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, but he's certainly the best goalkeeper I've ever seen for Liverpool, Alisson Becker. So if he's fit, he's playing.
It was either him or insert name of not a very good goalkeeper who's played for Liverpool. Just can't think of anyone. I mean, Peggy Affexad was he had his moments, but he wasn't the worst goalkeeper I've ever seen.
Stensgaard, remember him?
He never played. He had the ironing board incident, didn't he? So he could never play. There's other ones, Jorgen Nielsen. This is just me just regaling all of the old Liverpool reserve goalkeepers who never played. Tony Warner, there's another one.
Tony Warner.
Diego Cavalieri played. Daniele Padelli, he was in for one game. Paul Jones was on loan.
Emergency loan.
Obviously, there was my time. There was Mike Cooper. Obviously, you got Grobler, James, Friedel. Yeah, Friedel, yeah. Forget he played for Liverpool. Vesterveld, Kirkland, Dudek. Have we done them? Carson. Oh, yeah, yeah. Carson. Karius. Karius. Mignolet.
Checking history. I've
missed somebody. Who we missed out here? There's a main, obviously. Yeah. I knew there was one we'd missed out. Any more?
We need Theo for this.
Yeah.
Played 20 minutes on a friendly.
in answer to your question, because it wasn't your question, but I think obviously Keller has going to be in goal against Sheffield United. I think it's something that they're just going to have to get behind. And I think he's going to have to, when he plays against Sheffield United, that'll be only the second time ever he's played three consecutive games in a row competitive. So if he plays against Palace, that's four. And we know what Sheffield United are going to do. And we know what Palace are going to do. Now, there's never any question marks over his shot stuff. I know there was the two mistakes for the goals, but, you know, that can just happen. It's just unfortunate that it all happened in the same game and the one where people are going to be looking at him.
Yeah.
And I think he's got enough credit in the bank with stuff that's happened previously. I mean, let's face it, he played in a League Cup final. He was man of the match. So it's not as if he can't handle the big occasions.
It's just comparing him to Alisson, isn't it? He's the best I've seen. I think he's the best around. Like, so to someone who's got everything, like, and it just seems such a miss just to not have his presence. Alisson's just so commanding. Just seeing him on the pitch, and Keller has just, even just physically, he's just more slight. It just feels as though like teams will just feel immediately buoyed the fact that he's in goal, not Alisson. Yeah. It gives them that motivation. Liverpool could be got it because Alisson's not in goal. It's the most difficult thing in football to replace, to come in as a number two and replace the best goalkeeper in the world. So I feel for him, but I think he had a really poor day yesterday.
And it didn't help that was the one day where Liverpool's midfield, with the exception of McAllister, decided to stop doing all the defending as well. Because Gravenberch wasn't particularly great in that respect, and neither was Szoboszlai.
It's interesting, McAllister, though, because he's 26 now, and like you say, he doesn't really...
25?
25. Yeah, he doesn't play a whole lot, does he? And you wonder, does he have an ambition to maybe drop down the pecking order a little bit and play regularly another team? But he's funny that they're laid back and unflappable.
There's quite a lot of goalkeepers like that now. That would never happen when I was growing up. You got the likes of Henderson's one, Dean Henderson. I now can't think of any others.
Well, the Arsenal situation, Ramsdale and Raya. You know,
that's been debated. Chelsea, Kepa, and where is he now? Is he even still there?
He went to Sevilla, didn't he? Yeah, he went to Sevilla.
Oh, did he?
Or to Sevilla.
I do watch football sometimes.
Well, he had, obviously, Edouard Mendy didn't have him for long, really.
Well, there you go. He's another one. So there are, and I'm thinking of Sam Johnston at United before he went to, where is he now? Is he at West Brom still?
I don't know. But he was a United goalkeeper at one point.
So there's quite a few that are like that tend to stick around, but eventually they have to go off and do something. And what you're saying, we thought Keller might have done that last summer, didn't we? But Klopp seemed to be a bit indignant
we all sort of assumed that, well, certainly Liverpool did have interest behind the scenes, but we just assume that if a good offer comes in, Liverpool will think long and hard. But Klopp seemed kind of aghast at the suggestion that he might leave.
It's a bit skill set sort of suit as well, isn't it? Because if he drops down, like he's that sort of ball playing keeper. Drops down, it's like a team in the bottom half. It's like he could go to someone who's more like, you know, they don't really want someone playing around the back, and it's going to be more suited to like the defending long balls and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, but Brentford was always shot, wasn't it? But Brentford seemed a lot more direct than what would suit Kelleher, really. Yeah, I mean, as soon as Alisson's fit, he's coming back in, isn't he? And that's no real slight on Alisson or any other keeper who'd be in goal.
Now, obviously, it's Sheffield United next. So it looks like Sheffield United are going to sack their manager, Paul Heckingbottom, which, again, I haven't really researched this, but it seems as though that's not the first time that a team has sacked a manager just before they're about to play Liverpool. Looks like Chris Wilder might be coming in. I mean, is that going to make Liverpool's job harder at Sheffield United, or is it going to make it easier? Because the couple of times they've been there in the Premier League over the past 3 or 4 years, 5 years, I think, it's not been easy, has it?
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I mean, I don't know how much of an impact he'd be able to have now if he come in, Chris Wilder, other than just, you know, a bit of a team talk before the game. I think, imagine all the analysis will be done tomorrow. As the time of recording, Heckenbottom is still officially the manager. But, yeah, I mean, they've conceded 39 goals, Sheffield United, and that's seven more than the next lowest. I mean,
to be fair, about 25 of them were against Newcastle.
Yeah, and the rest of them were against Burnley. but that is some record already, isn't it? So, I've got a feeling the Klopp might go strong with the attacking numbers and look to just blow them away and get it all done, dusted, handy.
It never works like that, Paul. Come on. How long have you been doing this job?
But it should.
But it doesn't. It doesn't.
We'll see.
Anyway, yeah, so Sheffield United, would you be concerned about?
It's always a frustrating position in football, isn't it? Because it's like it's the unknown of when someone they get the new manager bounce, or when it's like, oh, that they put in a good performance for the old manager who's just departed. Like it changes the sort of the dynamics of the game so much, just having a new manager in charge. But I think Paul Heckenbottom, like I said, they conceded 39 goals. I think he tries to play a little bit of an expansive style of football. I think if Chris Wilder comes in, his immediate thing will just try and be to keep it a bit tight and not be as risky. So maybe just the idea of that changes the sort of the tactical outlook of the game as well. But so it does it adds that level of unknown and a little bit like it just adds a different psychology to the game. But I think if Liverpool don't win the game on Wednesday because of the gulf in quality between the two sides, it would be extremely, extremely disappointing.
I was watching the match of the day, highlights the other day, and when the teams come up before they show the highlights, I was looking at the Sheffield United team and I wasn't even thinking about the Liverpool game. I was thinking, that's not a great group of players for the Premier League. You know, yeah. Considering the level the Premier League's at as well, generally, now there's about 15 teams who are all really strong.
Do you feel a bit sorry for Heckenbottom because he got them up and then the owners basically said, there's no money and we're going to sell some of your best players. Yeah. Thanks.
What could he do?
But, I mean, obviously they've got a season to prove me wrong, but I'm looking at them thinking these are in the kind of Derby 08-09 territory and, you know, Swindon, when was that? 93, was it? 94? They haven't even got a kind of sprinkling of players who you might think would be half decent, really, in terms of going further up the league. So I think Liverpool have just got to really take the game by the scruff of the neck.
Now, Liverpool are up to second in the table. They're only 2 points behind Arsenal, who, obviously, we've mentioned before, they've drawn them in the FA Cup. I mean, just a quick word on that. Are you surprised that Liverpool should get a Premier League team in the FA Cup third round draw for the sixth time in the last 7 years, while some other teams play, I don't know, Echo FC at home?
Yeah, it'd be a tough game that against City.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Fling me boots. no, I'm not, because, you know, Liverpool always seem to draw a big team, don't they? I think Liverpool are a big draw for the television audiences, and at a time when the FA Cup is not quite the prestigious competition.
Speak for yourself. Once was. So let's not have this argument again.
I'd have to look back at the actual numbers, but Liverpool generally play Premier League team.
In the third round, they've had Everton twice, Wolves twice, and Aston Villa in the last six years. The only one.
West Ham were in there 1 year, weren't they? And
that was fourth round, though. That was fourth round. Just third round. I mean, you're right to suggest that Liverpool in the early rounds went up. It's a bit different when it's like the fifth round, the quarterfinals, semis, because then you're going to be playing a good team. But when there's a bigger chance of you not playing one, Liverpool tend to, as you mentioned under Klopp, a lot of the time, even in the League Cup, they seem to be playing.
Yeah.
The League Cup, like, you look at the kind of Premier League teams Liverpool have played. When you think of how many teams in that third round draw, you know, why is it never like, you know, the Metropolitan Police? it's always a Premier League team, isn't it?
The stats are crazy, aren't they? It goes against all statistics that it should have been drawn such a quality Premier League side away from home. So
I mean, I'm assuming that just evens itself out eventually. If it's like you do 500 draws, it'll be okay, you know? without leaning on my A-level maths.
We just want home draws for the cup.
I mean, Arsenal's a long way as well, isn't it? Yeah. And it'll be a Friday night, probably, won't it? At least we get a stopover. Then again, as we know, London, the city that always sleeps.
It's the city that can't wait to get to bed.
Exactly, yeah. It's like the city where everything shuts at 11:30. I think they do it for the tourists. I think all the locals know exactly where to go. Yeah. So
all the speakeasies.
Exactly, yeah. Right, so yeah, one final thing before we discuss our teams is that to say Liverpool are up to second. And that's because Manchester City drew 3-3 with Tottenham, my favourite team. And there was a bit of an incident at the end of the game where Erling Haaland, for anybody who's not seen it, well, where have you been? Even I've seen this. Erling Haaland, he gets the ball. He's fouled by Emerson Royal just inside the Man City half, but manages to get up and puts Jack Grealish clean through. And then referee Simon Hooper, who we may recognise from previous podcasts, such as Tottenham against Liverpool, he blows the whistle. Now, irrespective of who you support, that was an absolutely ridiculous decision, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh, it's crazy, isn't it? It's just, it's beyond belief where you're watching anything. Yeah, he plays advantage, which he should do. Then it's like the advantage leads to a one-on-one situation in the dying seconds. And you can only, until they release a statement to actually clarify what on earth has happened, you can only assume he's not seen Grealish, yeah, like he's in the pack of Tottenham players, or if there's a word in his ear that he's offside. But that's also crazy because the offside rule, as we know, is let the play run its course before the flag's raised. But either way, it's going to be another grovelling apology from the PGMOL, isn't it?
I think referees have got a very difficult job. We need to respect the decision, Paul.
I think you'll find that these things even themselves out over the course of a season.
Do think that this is a bit of a storm in the teacup. I think there's a kind of desire now to be absolutely outraged every single week.
Yeah.
And I thought Newcastle were outdone by against Paris Saint-Germain in the week, but I thought the reaction to that was massively over the top as well. It seems that since the Diaz incident, where that was just comically, incomprehensibly incompetent, since that, teams have fallen over themselves now to kick off. You know, we've seen it at Arsenal when they got beat by Newcastle, which, okay, I probably agreed with Mikel Arteta on the day. I thought it was out to begin with and thought it was probably a foul, but there just seems to be this trend now of just being apoplectic as often as you can with whatever the referees give. And okay, it was a bit of a strange one, but Grealish is still like 40 yards out.
Yeah.
He's not Usain Bolt, is he? He'd probably turn back and try and win a foul anyway. it's a strange decision, but you can't. I don't think we can start conflating this with the Diaz one, which was just, a unique error.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Conflating, there's a word you need to use. Exactly, you're learning
from the Liverpool FC home and away correspondent.
But obviously that happens. Then Erling Haaland, who is quite I think it's fair to say he's a beast of a man. He gets right in the face of Simon Hooper, says some things that we can't repeat on here, but I think sounds like truck, should we say, and things like that. And then after the game, he gets booked for that. Then after the game, he goes on social media I've not actually seen this, just read about it. Is it like a picture of the incident or a video? And he might just say WTF.
Yeah.
Which means what the flip, in case anybody needs a translation. Now, Virgil van Dijk got an extra one match ban for his reaction to being sent off at Newcastle, which at the time I remember just thinking, when people talking about it, going, well, no, actually, because it's just, he's not touched the referee. He hasn't called him anything from what we gathered. It was just obviously a very strong reaction to a decision that he thought was wrong. And whether you think it's right or wrong is irrelevant. It's just his reaction to it. Football's an emotional game. You see that they want that from the fans on the pitch. You want it from the players up to a certain point. Like, there's a certain line you can't go over. But at the time I thought Van Dijk hadn't crossed that line. He was already being sent off anyway. So that would have been the end of it. But he was... Because it's early in the season, we know the way these things work when they bring in a new initiative or they try and reimpose an initiative, such as the respect for referees, which is the fact that they have to do that is not a good sign anyway, but it's much needed and it's obviously very honourable intentions with it, and there should be more respect for referees, but there has to be consistency in the way that incidents are dealt with. So that brings us back to Haaland. So are we now expecting, or would you be surprised if Haaland didn't get another censure, whether it's a 100 grand fine, or a ban? Or is it because he hasn't been banned initially that makes it a bit more difficult to impose a ban?
Yeah, I think the thing with Van Dijk, what made it more kind of jarring was you're used to seeing him being quite smooth and relaxed and unruffled, aren't you? And he was really you know, we'd lost his rag that day.
You could say Haaland's the same because the accusation for him is that he's a robot, which clearly he isn't.
Yeah.
Right. But that he's shown such emotion.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Pictures didn't look great either.
When you're commenting WTF on social media over the decision from the ref, I think you've opened yourself up, haven't you, for whatever comes next.
I didn't get banned.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes... I mean, I almost feel like they want a bit of a police state, the referees, where you can't say anything and any kind of critique of them is viewed as, you know, insubordination and it must be cracked down on. But I think Haaland probably overstepped the mark with that one. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, Van Dijk got fined $100,000 for his outburst. We'll see if Haaland gets similar.
In my view of consistency is that neither of them should have had anything. Mm. Certainly not a ban. And probably fine, yeah, but not a ban.
But also, you know, you go back to the things that were very noticeable early in the season, adding loads of time on at the end of games. Bookings for doing that, for simulating the yellow, kicking the ball away and, you know, flipping on the refs and all those have just quietly just gone away, haven't they?
But the added time didn't. Yeah. They didn't yet, 20 minutes.
I know it's down for 20 minutes, yeah. but generally, you know, you're starting to see more like 3 or 4 minutes added on, like the way we've been used to. So it's almost like these things that were prevalent earlier in the season have just gone away. And Liverpool were being impacted by that. McAllister got one of his yellow cards. Did he get...
Yeah, that's Chelsea's first game of the season, yeah.
And he obviously had to serve a ban because of that. But yeah, it's just consistency, isn't it, like you say?
Yeah, I feel like the refs have made the rub for their own back sort of with that Van Dijk one because I think at the time it was...
It's not the refs though, was it? It's the FA.
It was the FA, so I feel like, when he did get more of a ban for that, it was a bit like, this is obviously going to come back on you. Like Liverpool fans or people involved in football are going to remember this and sort of be looking now to see if this level of consistency is applied throughout. And like, we don't really want that level of consistency to be applied throughout the games. Like, obviously, football is an emotional game. We don't want people to overstep the mark and totally disrespect the referees and stuff like that, because that is a line. But when there is like these like sort of explosions of emotion and stuff like that when something's happened on the pitch, like we do like to see that. It is part of the game. So to try and penalize players for that is going to fall back on them eventually, and people are going to look out for it then, is if that's going to be applied consistently. And obviously that happens so often where a player will say something to a referee when the decision's not gone the way. It's like, it's impossible to apply that same rule throughout. With the Haaland one, I think because this is such a high profile incident and because he's got now gone on social media after it, even after this, I feel like he probably will get something because of the high profile nature of it. But obviously it's not been applied like wholesale throughout the game, because it's been so many times. But you can lip read obviously when a player said something awful to a referee and nothing's happened to them.
Now an exciting bit. Now we get to be Jurgen Klopp for this. We're gonna pick our teams for who are they playing? Sheffield United at Bramall Lane on Wednesday. Right, so we go on Kelleher in goal.
Yes.
Now, Paul, I'll let you pick your four defenders first.
Yeah, I wonder whether Gomez might come in at left back, actually, just to give Tsimikas a little bit of a breather. The last thing he wants is him pulling up with a muscle injury, because I've got any left backs, have they? So I think Gomez might come in there, Trent to start, and Konate has obviously matched up his set for a spell on the sidelines.
Right, your defence?
I think Tsimikas was probably one of our best players yesterday. When he came back into the team, he was a bit dodgy at times, wasn't he? But I think he's played his way back into form. But I do sort of... I was going to start him, but I agree with your point there, really. I'm agreeing with the Liverpool FC correspondent on one away there.
We're getting a good manager at this one away thing. We're making up for lost time.
Yeah, I'm going to go for the same back four, just because, because Tsimikas did exert a lot of energy yesterday. And if he pulls up, then it's going to be a big problem.
And also, he assaulted a steward as well. He did not assault a steward, by the way. It's just funny. You look it up on social media. I actually, because the games are coming, you know, the turnaround's quite quick, I think Gomez will be better needed against Palace, so I'm sticking with Tsimikas. And about have Konate, Van Dijk and Trent. So midfield then, right? You're just hitting with three in midfield?
We'll do the three in midfield. It's a difficult one in midfield, isn't it? Because I think Curtis Jones will definitely come in for Gravenberch. I don't think he'll, because I don't think he'll do the complete wholesale changes of like doing an Endo, Jones and Elliot one, because that seems a bit too much disruption. But I think Jones, McAllister, and I'm tempted to say Endo and play McAllister favourite forwards. Is that a bit of a crazy one? I don't know. Maybe
it's your team.
I'm gonna stick with it. Enzo, Jones, McAllister.
I think he'll stick with McAllister. I think it's either or, isn't it, with him or Endo. I think Endo might be played Saturday lunchtime. I'll go with McAllister, Jones, and Elliot.
I agree with that. I agree. That's what I think it will be as well. And your forward line then?
Yeah, I mean, Salah's obviously going to start on the right.
Has Gakpo done enough to get in?
Actually, no. I'm going to review me midfield. I'm going to put Gravenberch in instead of
Gravenberch.
Gakpo. I'm going to put Gakpo in instead of Elliot. And he's going to play furthest forward. We're going to go a little bit of a 4-2-3-1 with Salah, Nunes, and Diaz.
I feel like Gakpo will definitely play because he was really good when he came on as well, and looked like he had loads of energy. I think Salah definitely. Maybe Nunes will have a rest. I'll go Salah, Gakpo, Diaz.
I agree as well.
I just think there's a good chance for Nunes to bag a few. To be honest, he'll get a few chances.
I think there are. Well, in that case, that might be a chance for him not to play then, if you see what I mean. Because if it's going to be a game where they're going to have loads of chances, then possibly bring him on at the end where he can score some. But it's going to be a more difficult game at Palace. Save him for that.
Mm.
Palace
is a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's terrible to get to.
Yeah,
yeah. You're not going, are you?
No, I'm off that weekend.
Yeah, wisely picked. So final thing, score prediction.
3-0.
Yeah, I was going to say 3-0, actually.
To Liverpool, yeah.
To Liverpool, to Sheffield United. 3-0 to Liverpool.
Yeah, 3-0.
I'm going to go 3-1. I think Sheffield United will score. And one of their goals is worth 5, so Liverpool actually lose 5-3. Right, that should do us. Thanks a lot, Ryan, for joining us.
Pleasure.
You might be welcome back soon, depending on whether anybody else can be bothered coming into the office anymore.
Yeah, I look forward to it. It's just me and Doyle, otherwise
it's
talking.
Otherwise it's going to be in conversation, which might get a little bit boring after a while. But that's it for now. Cheerio.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.